Hello and welcome to another episode of Baby Steps, the first steps understanding the paradox of parenting, because we are here for our kids 0 to 18 plus years, because as long as they're under our roof, they are under our care and under our love. Actually, generally, as long as they're our kids. So that's why I'm here.
And I hope you are subscribed and you enjoy the podcast. But that's beside the point, because we are here for our little kids and our big ones. A quick check-in, as I always do. How are you doing? And if you're in Kenya, I know this so-called new preventive measures are frustrating on some, but we move on regardless. God got us, right? So I hope you're okay. If not, I will not tire of begging you to please seek someone you can talk with. Who cares? And if you can't find one, please look for a therapist. They will help. Anyway, I am excited for today's episode. Why? Because we have a guest, and not just any kawaida or normal guest. She's one of my special little ones, my babies. I literally carried this one when she was still swaddled in a baby shop, and I'm not exaggerating. And now she's a teenager and growing into a fine young lady or girl. I don't know which one she prefers. Why is she on this podcast? Well, I didn't mention that she's now a teenager. And in case you forgot what your teenagehood was like and how crazy it seemed and misunderstood you felt, she's here to remind us, especially if you have teens or will have teens one day, the kind of support that they need in this world of an age where you don't know if you want to be treated as a complete adult or still like a child, and our parents don't know either. And we have this whole battle with them and end up losing them in the process. So we want to hear it from the teenage girl's perspective, and hopefully next time from the teenage boy. And just a disclaimer, this is not a one-size-fits-all, because your teenager is unique. But I'm sure, certain without a doubt, that whatever Mora you tell us will greatly help us, because she represents the average hip teenager. So I'd like us to hear what it's been like also a lot through this COVID pandemic for them, because we don't hear much on what is happening in the kids and teenagers' lives and how it's been in and out of school, especially since they're home for like 10 months and back to school for 3 months without a break. So enough about the introduction, because it's time for another Did You Know fact. So drum rolls. You know that research suggests that laziness is just a common part of being a teenager and doesn't reflect bad behavior. This is because their body is undergoing major physiological changes which take up a lot of their energy, so cut them some slack when they want to sleep in. But this does not mean I advocate for laziness, so please still make sure they do some work and become responsible adults. Now back to base. Welcome to the podcast, Mora. I know I've just mentioned your name, but please introduce yourself and anything you'd like us to know about you. And of course, your age. You're still young enough to not find it offensive.
Hi, Daniela. And hi, listeners. My name is Mora, and I am 16 years of age. I am extremely excited to be on the podcast, and I can't wait to dive into the topic.
Awesome. Thanks for actually accepting. And I know I've mentioned I've known you longer than you've known me, obviously. So I'm going to ambush you with a question. How would you describe me?
Describe you?
Yeah. Well,
Danielle is very... that's a good question. Okay. Very nurturing and loving. Quite wise, and creates like a really safe space for many of us. I mean, like teenagers that she's taught or carried or whatever, to, you know, just be ourselves and express ourselves. And yeah, something that not many of us can do or feel comfortable doing often. So yeah, I would say that.
Oh wow, even me, I'm blown away. Honestly, was not expecting that. And okay, thank you. I'm actually very flattered that that's how you described me. Despite hesitating, it was worth the wait. So, you know, they say, okay, I don't know who exactly, but they do say that times have changed. And despite, honestly, because people may think I'm old, I was a teenager less than 10 years ago. I know that dynamics have changed, because I work and spend time with you guys. Yeah. And you're peers and listening to the issues you guys are going through and the challenges and trying to be there for you. But they sound quite different from ours, especially with the dawn of so many forms of social media and the pressure to conform, like those IG models who live their lives, and the stress because, oh, Nani is living like this. You feel like your life is a bit different. And then there's also school, the pressure to perform, especially if you're in Kenyan system schools. But actually, I got to realize, because I interact with guys from your friends from other systems, is that it's actually not just Kenyan schools. Then there's also home things and then peer pressure. It feels like a whole different ball game. And so my question to you is, like, could you tell us what in life you would say gives you and your age mates the hardest time and why?
The hardest time and why?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be one thing. It could be a list of stuff.
I think actually just everything you just said, just school and social media and home. Because, like, okay, let's start with social media. Because on social media, it's definitely evolved from the times that, well, you've evolved with it because you started using it way before us. Mm-hmm. But, okay, nobody's on Facebook these days.
Except wow.
Maybe wow. Like our parents or something.
Keep insulting my age. It's okay.
I'm just saying, like, there's more you're exposed. We're exposed to more forms of social media. So there's Instagram, there's Snapchat, there's whatever else there is. Quite honest. Oh yeah, there's Twitter. Yeah, and there's a lot that goes on those apps. Aside from, I mean, like, social media is a good thing. It makes the world, you know, a global village.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its own advantages, but, like, there's also, like, I think it also really depends on your mindset, because mm-hmm. a teenager, as you're growing, as you're trying to discover yourself, because there's this set standard of beauty, and first of all, we're African, we're Black. And, you know, it's only in modern times that Black women are appreciated in the modeling industry, or darker skinned women, let's just say that. Yeah. And there's also a matter of, I mean, these are things you can really change. You can change your skin color, you can change your hair texture, but you're tossed in this sea where there's only a specific set standard of beauty, where it's straight hair and light skin and flat tummy and, you know, a specific figure, and you're trying to navigate through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's alone, because now let's go to home. If you don't have a good relationship with your parents, there's literally nobody to affirm you that you are beautiful, you are loved. And, you know, you venture into funny things. I'm not saying me personally, but, like,
yeah,
I'm saying what's yeah. there.
So you put that disclaimer, not you.
Just putting it out there, guys. But if you're not affirmed that, you know, you're beautiful, you're worthy of love and affection and all these nice things, then you try to look for affirmation from different people. And it wouldn't necessarily be people your parents might approve of. You know, it might be, now you get into funny relationships that
mm-hmm.
I guess just cause trauma in the long run. So yeah, there's that, and it's quite heavy, but, like, it honestly is what it is.
Yeah, you mentioned this whole, I just want to take us back a little bit on the social media part and mm-hmm. all this pressure of the standards mm-hmm. of beauty that are there and everything, and the need of affirmation. Like, if you don't have it at home, you end up seeking it. Now the yeah. pressure increases, and then now you end up seeking it probably from the wrong sources. And so
yeah.
a parent right now is listening to you right now, because truth is, mm-hmm. as Maura has said, and with the many teenagers and young people I interact with, I know the pressure from what social media, what the world quote-unquote describes as beauty, despite the word telling us, oh, you're fearfully and wonderfully made, is that we can't avoid that pressure. But when it becomes at home, nobody makes you feel worthy, or like you are a queen, you know, or a princess or whatever it is, or you're just beautiful as you are and your body is great and your hair is great, your skin tone, the melanin is just beautiful. So what would you tell a parent who's listening right now if they have a teenager or about to have a teenager?
So I would say for your daughters or your children in general, even your sons, just try to affirm us as your teenagers. Tell us we are beautiful, and you know, just keep reminding us. It's something that, because you know, we're exposed to social media every day. And if you told me last month and I'm exposed to it every day, I guess like maybe it'll reach a point when I'm seeing all these models are actually genuinely beautiful and I start to doubt my beauty. And, you know, I might even forget what you said. I'll just be wallowing in sadness and just like, wow, she's so pretty. And I'm not saying it's bad to acknowledge other people's beauty, but like how it happened is you acknowledge it as you kind of compare and say, she has this and I don't have it, so I'm not beautiful. So just constantly remind your daughters that they are beautiful and that you love them, and that they are worthy of love and affection. Yeah. And your sons as well.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Parents, I hope we are hearing that. Affirmation really goes a long way when it comes to your kids. Because out here, the world, as parents, I mean, you've worked before or you've interacted with people, whether it's business or anything. And you see how people can tear you down. And yet you're grown enough to at least try and manage it. Imagine now if our kids start getting experience to these things at such a young age. So as Mora said,
could I add like one thing?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So another thing on social media is, as Danielle has mentioned or passively mentioned, there's cyberbullying that can happen. And I mean, like, we're not really in control of who texts us or this, that, or the other, but like, even if I choose to ignore it, it doesn't mean that I haven't read whatever mean thing has been said or whatever mean opinion has been aired out. I can choose to ignore it, that's true, but I will have read it, and one way or another, it'll affect my view on myself, unless I'm constantly affirmed by those around me and those that I know would not lie to me. It will definitely affect me in one way or another. So that's another thing about social media.
Okay, wow, cyberbullying. I think it's a very horrible thing. I think one of the worst channels for cyberbullying, now that Mora told us that those of us on Facebook are old, is that Twitter. Twitter, I know, is a place that can rip you to non-existence. You do one wrong comment or you post one picture, maybe you're proud of that picture and you just give a comment and they just decide they're going to tear you down. And to parents, the advice is not to take your kids' phones away from them, because that is not solving the problem, because either way they're going to have to deal with it. As Mora, she says, affirm your kids and just let them know that you love them and that they're worthy. Talk to them, find out how their days have been, how, whatever it is their social media handle okay, and you don't have to tap into their phones? Are they okay? Like, just find out, because are they being bullied? That's how a lot of kids are wooed, first of all, into traps by friends or older, way older people. Like, just talk to them. I think just talk to them. Mm-hmm. And while we're on that, how, but I know we need to go to the school, because I think that's a very serious issue. But so there's a lot happening in your world and a lot of it that our parents usually don't know about for one reason or the other. And communication, open communication is very key. How would you, because I need to be able to trust my dad and mom and be open enough to tell them, okay, this is exactly what's happening in my life. So how would you tell or advise parents to open communication with their kids? And is it too late if my kid has already reached teenagehood? For example, your parents, I know that's not the case, but if you didn't have open communication with them, would you say that it's ever too late to open communication? And if not, as a parent who's listening and I feel like I do not know my child or we don't have this free open communication. How can I do that?
Wow. Okay. I think personally, like, I don't think it's too late. There's still, hopefully God gives you and your child long life, so you're able to build a relationship if you don't have it yet. But I think, because this is like a friendship you want to establish, and it's also good to understand, like, trust isn't just something that happens, you know, just overnight. It has to be developed. It's like any other friendship you have. You have to make time for your child. You have to also open up on your end and just make a safe space where they don't feel like when they come to you, it's going to be another argument or another lecture. Yeah. I think that's really important. Like, why? I think the main reason it's hard for us to approach you guys as our parents is because, like, everything is just a lecture. Surely, everything just has to become a lecture. But what we're saying is, like, just, okay, I personally don't think everything should turn into a lecture. If you're also giving your opinion on a certain issue, because we are also growing up and we're trying to not establish our independence in your homes. No, we still respect you and love you, but we're also just trying to figure out ourselves and, you know, just grow into responsible young men and women. So I think it should be more of a discussion than it is a lecture, so that also your teenager can feel like they're involved in whatever decision it is you are coming to. And yeah, I think that's all I have for now.
Okay.
My mind, yeah.
I know there'll be parents who'll be like, what do you mean you want to be involved in decisions? You are my child. You're under my roof.
Wow.
You're under my roof. Decisions you will make when you leave my house. Which, as trying to sit on the fence on this conversation, is I totally understand where they're coming from. Because when you let a child, when I talk about a child, is anybody under a parent's roof still, is that when you let them do whatever they wish to do, at all the time, I want to consider your decision. Like, if you do that with a baby, they'll decide they're never going to bath. Or they're those who decide, cool. So it's like, no, in this house, we do X, Y, Z. So I think there's a good balance between the non-negotiable in a household, because every organization, every place has to have rules. Otherwise, things will just go haywire. So I get where, fine, as parents, yes, rules have to be established and your word has to be final. For example, in this house, there shall be no cigarettes ever brought here. It has to be, like, that's your standard rule. That's a standard rule. But I think what Mora is trying to say is that if I come to you with, let's say, this is happening in my life, I'll give a good case scenario, and I know maybe some parents will not really want to hear this, but reality is our kids are human beings, and they are growing, and they'll be attracted to the opposite sex, which I think is a very normal thing. Then if, for example, Mora, as your daughter, comes to you and says she thinks this guy named Mark is really good looking and she's attracted to him. Eh, you talk to boys, you're going to get pregnant. You know, okay, because a lot of us, we had a lot of crazy things when we were growing up. I mean, not from my mom, because my mom was very open, but from the church and from other people in the society, whether it's teachers or whatever it is. And I think what Mora is trying to say is, let it not be a lecture. I think approaching such a situation would be like, oh, tell me more about him. Then, like, okay, I don't have a problem with you interacting with Mark. Yes, but I feel like this is what happens when you need to set your boundaries, you need to set your standards. This is what happens when standards are crossed. It's better than lecturing the person, taking away their phone, deciding they're never going to meet their friends and telling them how much of a horrible person and a bad person and they're going to hell. I think that's what Mora is trying to say. Like, when I come to you as a parent, try and first of all understand it from my perspective, even if it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it's okay, you will lose your mind and probably shout, but it should not be the everyday kind of whenever I try to approach you, because if that ends up being it, I end up closing up and I end up figuring out life on my own and for my fellow peers, and it's not the best way to figure things out because that's how we make the most mistakes. Have I understood you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I think it's just open communication. Let your kids not feel like if I ever come to dad or mom, it's just going to be a lecture. I would rather just deal with whatever I'm dealing with on my own. Or if I was introduced to drugs, I cannot come and tell my mom, I'll just continue telling because it gave me a good kind of high. But if I can tell my mom or my dad, then they'll be like, okay, what kind of help do you need? Is there a problem? You know, how can we help you sort this thing out? So just, I think, very key to open communication for our teenagers, especially as they're growing and just trying to navigate through life. I mean, that's fine. Some of us went through good homes, great homes, and some of us didn't. So you know what it is like not to be supported. You know what it is like to constantly be lectured and nobody listening to your side. You know what it feels like to be abused or insulted because of just whatever is happening or whatever you're feeling as a young person. You know how it is to not be supported and nobody care for you. So we really want to change that narrative for our kids. And as we continue talking about challenges, how has it been for you during this COVID period? For you especially, I mean, you went back to school and I know you're in a boarding school and a national school, one of the top national schools. How has it been like?
Going back to school.
Yes, like how was the school experience? Because now there's this pandemic, then there's probably a lot of things I know of people who, I mean, it was all over the internet, but I do know of kids who people come from a very abusive, violent or neglected household. And then all of a sudden you've thrown back to school. Was there support from the teachers? How was it navigating mentally for you guys, emotionally? What was the school term like during this COVID period? What were some of the hardest things? I probably asked a lot of questions, but just answer whichever you your fears, your struggles, yeah.
Okay. So this term, the COVID term that we've just come from January to March, it was quite a different term, of course, given the fact that we are in the midst of a pandemic. So it was quite different, and not just with the physical regulations like wearing a mask, washing your hands, this, that, and the other, but the academic pressure, I think, was a lot because the teachers were trying to cover most of the syllabus of, for example, I'm in Form 2. So where we left off in 2020 first term, which was not too much covered, they finished the syllabus, actually. We hadn't reached the middle when we left, but when we came back, we picked up from where we left off and we finished the syllabus.
Oh.
So the teachers were really focused on, especially the fact that I'm in a national school, the academic pressure was probably like 10 times more than any other school. So it was demanding for excellence and you just have to get it now. You don't have time. Form 2s, you're doing KCC next year. There's no time for Form 2 fever. You know, I'm always hearing this Form 2 fever. But there's literally no time. Like, just get into the system and read. I'm not saying there should be time for Form 2 fever, but...
No, it makes sense. I mean, it's crazy because you're saying you hadn't been reached halfway and yet they have crammed an entire year in a term. And this is where I am just like, you know, when I saw, because I'm also in the education field as much as I'm in the psychology field, is that I saw when the timetable came out and the CS was like, oh, there's going to be 4 terms, there's going to be, I'm like, this is a bad idea. I get you to go back to January, like the normal system, but are you thinking about these children? Are you thinking about the pressure? Well, there's already natural pressure with our normal 3 terms.
Quite overwhelming. I think that's the word. Quite overwhelming.
And this is horrible. If you're in the education ministry right now and you're hearing this, you guys are honestly not doing these kids justice. And I think it's very unfair. We should have just adjusted the terms. We should have started in September. Let the kids go through a normal system. I mean, with everything that's already going on, it's a pandemic. This thing is affecting the kids as much as it's affecting us. Probably even more. because they have no control over what's happening. And then you come to school and your teachers are trying to, your teachers are not trying, they have crammed a year's content in 3 months, less than 3 months actually, because you guys closed last week, or is it the other week? So like mid-March, so in 2.5 months. As in, honestly, we have big problems in this country, but one of them honestly has just been this education system. It's just not fair, personally. And here we're hearing it as students, that it's just not fair. I don't even want to imagine if those kids who, I mean, I know Mara comes from a very stable home. I imagine those kids who didn't come from a stable home and you're coming to school and there's not even time to breathe. It's just pressure upon read upon. You know what? I might think boarding school is a scam. And I will proudly say that because none of my kids, primary or high school, or even is going to a boarding school ever. I was in a boarding school, primary, I think for 1.5 years. No, 1 year, class 8 and third term of class 7. Most horrific experience. I went to a great high school, but still, boarding school is a scam. If you can avoid taking your kids to boarding school, please don't. It's not even just the pressure to read. And I think Morales is going to talk more about what it looks like in this system. And me, honestly, no. I can't. I just cannot stand this situation. I can't. So, let's just move on. How was the support in school? How were the teachers like? Was there any kind of, I guess every school should have guidance and counseling, but I know also having trained in the education background, they should be able to notice when kids are going through stuff. Was there any kind of emotional or mental support for you guys when you got to school? Like, how was home, or how is COVID taking you guys? The pressure of school, can we give you a break? You know, was there any kind of support? What was it like this term?
In the beginning, the teachers were, like, let's say for like the first 2 weeks, as we were settling down, I think my class was actually really fortunate. We had one of the old girls who's also a teacher. She came to talk to us and she was basically just, okay, what they tell us is, which is true. They tell us whatever situation you left at home is not in your control. So just let it go. Focus on your studies. And yeah, that's the advice. So I think this is in consideration of also the people that come from not so well off background, so they would probably be stressed about school fees, or maybe their parents are sick, or whatever circumstance that they are going through. That's just to, you know, give them motivation that, or just assurance, and just the fact that you can't really control it. Just study hard, pray, and all will be well. So I think that was just the first 2 weeks. And from there, I can tell you for a fact, because there was no break, or because we were at home for 9 months, and many people come from dysfunctional families, so they were dealing with a lot of trauma from the various homes, and there was no break, there was no definite mental support system, that's the word. There was no support system in place where we were like given special attention or anything like that. And I think the main issue is, I heard you mention that there's guidance and counseling in schools.
Yeah.
But the reason why, I know somebody could be asking, or like a parent could be asking, if there's guidance and counseling, then can't they just go there? But the issue is, it's not a safe space. It's really not a safe space, because personally, I know that the counselor in our school will go and tell the administration whatever you tell them. If it's, for example, that you're having a mental breakdown and you're dealing with it by self-harming, which I will get to in a few minutes, it becomes a whole problem. So you get in trouble for opening up, and you're just wondering, like, now what do I do? So it's the better option to just die with your issues, because wherever I turn, it's just another problem. And the self-harm that I've taught myself to console myself, quote unquote, is something I learned from my peers on social media, because those are the only people that I can open up to without feeling judged. And so, yeah.
What the parents who probably have no idea, or listeners who have no idea what you mean by self-harm. They probably have a clue, but what do you mean by self-harm? Like, what are the kind of...
So self-harm is when you inflict pain on yourself to measure up to the psychological pain that you're feeling, like to kind of counter the psychological or emotional pain that you're going through.
Like what kind of physical things do people do?
So the various methods of self-harm are, for example, cutting yourself on your arms or on your thighs, and those are the physical ones that I know of. Yes, there's slitting your arms and your thighs. Yes.
And there's something I think you mentioned, is that a lot of these things, because let's say we don't have the appropriate channels to deal with whatever emotional or psychological pains or traumas where we end up going, so we pick it from social media and peers. Right.
Yes.
All right. So I know that for parents who are listening, and let me not get too lost with Mora here. It's not that they want to do this, is because fine, they have no outlets. Some of us were either had homes where we could openly talk to our parents, or if our parents were just not available, we had aunties or uncles or older people, you know, in the society who we could talk to. Which is also now to those who listen, even if you're not a parent, but if you have a teenage niece or nephew or neighbor or somebody in your church, please talk to them. Find out how they're doing. Give them a safe space. She's mentioned how that even their guidance and counselor in the school will go and rat out to the administration. Now, as a practicing psychologist myself, I know usually the times when, and this is also for the teenagers listening, Mora and the others, if as a counselor, I see you have whatever you're doing is potentially very harmful to you or anybody around you, I will have to tell the person in authority. So like if I'm counseling a teenager right now and they're doing something self-harm, one thing you tell them at the beginning, if I feel your life is in danger or that of somebody else, I will need to tell your parents. So that's probably why the guidance and counselor or the therapist or psychologist in the school would say it out. Where I would say is an issue is if they know that you're not in potential danger, you're not in any danger, you just are going through something and you just need to talk to them, and they end up going to rat out to authorities. And I know that happens because I've worked in schools and you get to hear everybody's issues, is that it's not professional and makes it harder for kids to want to come open up to you, because they're like, even if I say it now, everybody's going to know about it. Mm-hmm. And then I will be shamed for it. And then now what do they do? As teenagers, they shut down completely and they learn to deal with their issues on their own. And even if they decide, okay, now because the cutting of the self, because I have seen some teenagers who've done that, if they realize, okay, this one has been found out, they'll find something else to do. Believe you me, the body has, when the mind is exhausted and in so much trauma, it doesn't know how to deal with it. It will always find a physical way to deal with it. The same way we're told almost 80% of diseases start in the mind. By the time your body is falling sick, mm-hmm. started in the head. So it's the same thing with mental illness. If our kids don't feel safe with us, if they don't feel like they can trust us or they have an authority figure to trust, because as parents, if you feel very old school, like I don't talk to my kids about if it's sex or if it's drugs, if it's, find a trusted adult who you think or you're sure, actually, or think you're sure you can trust and can talk to them about it. So they have a safe space and they are not learning it from peers, because the blind should not lead the blind.
That's 100%.
Yes. All that does is it's just going to cause more and more trauma. They're going to handle things in the wrong way. And then before you know it, the kid has developed schizophrenia, which if you listen to one of my previous episodes, I did talk about it. But just so we know, I'm forgetting the statistics exactly, is that I think 25% of mental illnesses form in childhood, and 75% of them develop during adolescence. By the time a child is developing something like schizophrenia, it starts during adolescence and it picks up in adulthood. If we don't have kids in these cases, or if we don't want them going to rehab, or, you know, just losing them completely, let's give them open spaces. And if you feel you can't do that, seek a therapist, seek a family member who you know you can talk to, or somebody in whichever, if you're in a faith-based organization, or a teacher you can trust, because they're mostly in school. So, Mara, tell me more about school. How was it? Because I know you have friends. What was it like for them? Because I know you come from a stable homestead. How was it like? And God bless your parents, and you're very blessed. It's, unfortunately, it's not something that many teenagers are able to go through, you know. And that also doesn't exempt you from the peer pressures. You know, that one thing parents assume is, oh, the kids have everything they need and maybe so they're exempt from it. It doesn't exempt anybody. But what was it like for, the experience of others? What was it like?
I would say, because actually two really close friends of mine come from broken families, and the 9 months that I enjoyed wasn't as pleasant for them. And I was shocked to know that school for them is actually an escape from the many troubles that they have at home. And during the 9 months, I think their mental health was tested greatly. And when we came to school, a lot happened, and what was going on in their families was kind of exposed, and found comfort and relief because they were surrounded by their peers and they could choose a space where they feel happy and safe. It wasn't like that for them this term because, again, of the academic pressure that was there and generally just the disregard for mental health in Kenyan systems of schooling, where you're told that we provide you with everything you need and therefore there's no space for you to be mentally not okay. Your physical health and your mental health should be okay because it's an ultimatum, kind of like, you should be okay because we give you everything you need. You don't have anything to be stressed about, without even taking into account that people were at home, probably not in the healthiest of environments, and therefore they could have problems that they carried with them that are really affecting. Yeah, I would say that in school, and I think generally just in Africa, mental health is something sort of like a taboo, especially at this age. Like, what do you have to be stressed about? There's nothing. You have a roof over your head, you have clothes, you have food on your table, and that should be enough to sustain you and keep you sane, which honestly I'm eternally grateful for these basic needs. But sometimes it does go deeper than that, and I think it's essential for generally the older generation to just try and understand that times are changing and there's honestly a lot more to be depressed about than probably what they had in that time. There's a lot more to be anxious about. And just generally understanding that there's mental health is wide. There's anxiety, there's depression, there's imposter syndrome. Like, there's just a lot that was probably there in the past, but now we have names for it. We can identify it and say, this is what I have. And we're trying to navigate through life and deal with it. And I would say, personally, like, knowledge is power. Just try to understand mental health in general.
So, knowledge, there's probably an adult listening right now.
Yeah.
Sasa nini. Okay, sorry. I realize also how people, let me translate it to English. Now, you people, you think you're depressed, you're like, is it that they're probably thinking, is it that it's a weaker generation? Is it, like, what is it? Because I'm sure there's at least one adult listener who'll be like, you people don't even know what you're talking about. Just because mental health has become, like, highlighted these days, now you feel like everything, oh, my health, my depression, my anxiety. And I'm doing that in a coughing kind of phone because I know of a lot of others who cough it because, as you said, we have a name for it now. And
yeah,
they would be like, you guys are just putting this on yourselves, or you're okay. You mm-hmm. just want to put depression on yourself. We went through worse issues. You know, I did not have shoes. I once jumped over a fence and I broke my leg and I had to walk with it broken. You guys do not know what you're talking about. And I said it because I know, because I've interacted with others, because I'm somewhere in between your parents and like you guys. And I know that's a lot of how they think. Like, you guys have no idea. Hmm? My dad used to beat me and I bled to death, but I resurrected. Hmm? Me, I just shout at you once. Now you want to go and throw yourself off the roof.
I think even them, they need to get checked. They're the ones that need to go to therapy because those are traumas, my dear.
Don't so put too. That in there. I think so too.
Because oh my God.
My thinking about it is that, yes, I don't know if I'd call it a weaker generation. Because here's the thing, there's an episode I did on resilience. And if as a parent you've not listened to it, please go look for it. It's something resilience. Honestly, I've done quite a number, so I don't remember the exact name. But it's about raising resilience in kids. And I'm not saying that because I deal with the teenagers and I'm somewhere in between both generations, is that I'm not saying that what they're going through is not real. As Mora has rightly and so smartly put it, is that we have a name to it. You know, the same way cancer is happening right now, it's not that we didn't know people are not dying of cancer, that we didn't have a name for it. Even before malaria became a pandemic, when it did become a pandemic, we didn't have a name for it. Because people are just dying. Then you figured out, oh, wait, people are dying of malaria. Let's treat malaria. Does not mean that the people who are dying of it were weaker. It's just because we finally had a name. And it's the same thing with mental health. But it's also about building resilience in your kids. Because if from as a child, is a baby, immediately they fall down, oh, mama, are you okay? Come on, Lisa. You know, for many of us, it was like, stand up, dust yourself. First of all, our parents would be like, oh, don't look at them, because if you look, they'll start crying, you know? And literally, kids actually do. I have experimented with that because I have worked with a lot, hundreds of kids, probably thousands. If you don't look at them and don't give them the attention, they will pick themselves up and they will move. But you see, when we actually got genuinely hurt, like badly, that it was serious, our parents would actually give that attention. They would not tell you move on with life. No. But it was a small thing. They'll be like, pick yourself up, move on. Oh, Danielle has done this to me. Tell her to stop it. Not all the time you're going to fight your kids' battles. That's what happens. When they grow older, everything now becomes an issue. I am a trained counselor, psychologist, and work with different clients of different ages. So I'm not saying that it's not an issue, because there are people who are brought up resilient, but there's some issues in life that will always bring you down. And now, as Mora has said, there are kids who you come from a home that is just completely dysfunctional. Then you come to a school where they're cramming a year's content in 2.5 months. And then the counselor who's going to spread your issues up there. And then now everybody's looking at you in a different kind of way. You have nobody to talk to. And because there's so much pressure, there's just no space to do anything. What I'm trying to say is that let's be more supportive of our kids. And also let's build resilience so that they don't break at the slightest thing. But if you know you've brought your kid in resilience, the thing that will still pull them down as normal human beings. If you're Christian, even Jesus wept. Even he told his father, take this cup away. And he was God. Take this cup away from me. I can't do it. Like, it's heavy. It's exhausting. It's painful. So if they feel that kind of pressure, you can imagine what us as fully human beings are feeling. And if it's going on in our schools and the kids are going through certain kind of stuff, they need as much support as possible, as Mora is saying. So I don't know. If we call it a weaker generation, I wouldn't necessarily say it. I think Mora has put it in a way, I don't think, if I didn't have her on this episode, I wouldn't have put it in that way. We now have a name to it. And it's an issue that needs to be handled. And our kids need to be taught, first of all, one, resilience. But when you get overwhelmed, they need to feel that hurt. But Mora, you've been in high school for about 2 years. And like, I don't know if teachers have become more or less sensitive to students. Are you guys supported? Like, even if you're going through something or you've been caught in a certain kind of mistake, how is it usually handled? Like, is it with grace? There's one thing you've mentioned for a lot of students, it's relief from whatever is going on at home, right?
Yeah.
So for parents, if you know for certain your home is, for lack of a better word, is hell, and you know what I mean by that, because you're in that home as a parent, please, and you just find a good school and let it be your kids' haven. But even as you take them there, please, as Mora mentioned at the beginning of the episode, always affirm them, reassure them that you love them, that they are beautiful or handsome and they've got this, and like, just reaffirm them, you're going to succeed, you know, just give your best in case you need anything. I'm here for you. No matter what's going on at home, I'm always going to be here for you. So anyway, it's a haven for some. But back to the topic, how was it in school for you guys? If people make mistakes, how do the teachers deal with it? Is it supportive? Do they correct in love, or do they correct and you're like, no?
I think even from your days, you know that a Kenyan teacher generally is just a very, I don't want to say, because there might be teachers here and we absolutely respect you and quite honestly fear you, because I think it's even gotten better for us. There's not much of caning, but it doesn't take away from the fact that they can still, you know, taunt you by mouth and just tell you all these manner of things that, you know, you're just in shock and you're like, wow. So you're my parent in school. I spend most of my time being in school, but you're here and you're literally degrading me and making me feel less because I failed a question, like just a question, or I did something small that you can just correct me in love and just tell me, Mora, next time don't do this. Or maybe I did break a school rule, but it doesn't, I don't feel like it's okay that you shame me. I'm not saying don't correct me, but correct me in love from a loving point of view. And I think this came into play in school when, again, the older generation there, I feel like sometimes the teachers are not considerate of how we feel, because even as we grow and we're in adolescence, there's a lot of emotions that we go through. So the emotions and possibly the emotions that come from us trying to deal with the traumas that maybe we got from home during the corona period. And as I mentioned earlier, there are some people that self-harm as a method of relief and just releasing the emotions. So, and this, I admit, is not something usual. My understanding of our situation in school is that the teachers were doing what they deemed best for the students that they cherish and that they look at as their daughters. And though I don't agree with the method that they used, I know that they had our best, I mean, the victim's best interest at heart. But I just feel that how they did it wasn't kind. Let me say that. Yeah, wasn't kind. So what happened was, because of possibly the traumas that people went through during the 9-month break and all the academic pressure and just not know. So what they did is they made the girls wear, let's call them banners.
Okay, so what have the girls done?
The girls, or they had opted to self-harm because of many problems they have, and they were just trying to find a release for the trauma that they went through during the 9 months and the increasing academic pressure, and many of them possibly weren't as resilient as the system requires you to be. So they crumbled under pressure and they resorted into self-harm. And when the administration found out, the girls were forced to wear, let me call them banners, of basically just explaining what they did. So it was a manila paper that was hung around your neck with a string, and was written your name and that you cut yourself, and that you're stupid for having cut yourself. So they were forced to walk in the field when everybody was out for games. And personally, I think it was quite demeaning for them because they were already struggling with whatever it is they were struggling with, and now to deal with shame and everybody just looking at them in a different light and saying, that's the one that self-harms. And, you know, not many of our peers also understand what leads their fellow classmates to do this. So they'll probably just look at them differently and treat them differently. And basically, even if school was a haven for you, now it just turns into this other toxic space that you're not welcome in, and everybody is just judging you constantly. And now you completely have nobody to talk to. Everybody's judging you at home, at school, and you just sink possibly into even deeper depression, and that's how you lose this generation. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know, hey, I don't know. I think I'm a bit traumatized just from hearing how whatever I did to myself now has been made public and I've been made a public ridicule. Like a manila paper hung with string. I don't know if we remember, okay, if you've done history, I don't know if you guys remember or have ever studied this thing. When the colonizers introduced this kipande system, it was where you had this string of identification. It was more of to demean you as an African, as a Kenyan. And if you knew how horrific it was back then, why would we do it in a modern term? And this time is that, you know, this child is going through, I mean, nobody wakes up and decides to start doing that to themselves. Unless now they've gone to borderline in what we call in psychology, they have a personality disorder, just want to harm themselves in any kind of way. And then instead of helping, you make them public ridicule. And I think a lot of us should know, or if we don't know, let me let you know that most of us have passed through, by the time you listen to this, most of us have probably passed through teenagehood. And it's a very, very sensitive period in our lives. There's a lot of things happening in our bodies. There's a lot of things happening in our minds. We do not really know who we are. We're trying to figure out, where do I fit in? Where don't I fit in? Where am I going to go with my career? Like, there's so much going on in our heads. And then you add on instability at home, and then you come to school and maybe this should have been my haven, and I'm no longer getting the support because now it's all academics and there's no support from whoever is supposed to give us the support. And then now they end up shaming me when they find out that I have a problem instead of talking to me. I don't know. Like, this thing is bothering me. Like, why I'm even talking slower and softer is because I'm a bit traumatized and shocked and scared for our kids. And the thing is, as a parent, this could be your daughter. This could be your son. I will actually bring a boy during the next podcast because I need to know if they self-harm. I know there are those who do. I personally have not met any. Have met girls because they're the ones who talk more and open up more. Boys mostly go into drugs. That one, I'm sure, is usually the escape. I don't know if it's self-harm. We'll find out in the next episode. But the fact that our teachers are dragging our kids around schools with placards, putting their problems out there for a school of almost 2,000 students to look at. Can we talk to our kids, find out what's happening in school? Are they being victimized by the teachers? Are they going through things at home that you maybe are not seeing, and then they carry to school, and because of the trauma, then now teachers are making them walk around, like in the Bible, where the lepers had to shout, unclean, unclean, and walk around with a bell, and everybody would just disperse and like, yuck, you know, these sick, cursed people. is your kid being victimized in school? Because a lot happens in 3 months, because our children spend more time in school than they do with us. Are they being victimized? Are they being traumatized in the school? So we need to find out what's happening to them in these schools, because this is where cases of physical, sexual, emotional abuse happen. And they're carried, whether it's from their peers or from their teachers or from the teaching staff. And if you don't find out, this is the traumas our kids go on with. They get into the work environment, the pressure becomes too much, they decide, I'm better off not on this earth. Suicide rates are very high. Self-harm rates or attempted suicide, it's very high in this country. Our kids are going through a lot. And that's why I personally think, it's a scam. It could be anywhere. But find out, are they okay? Are they being treated okay? I mean, the kids are probably a lot, and teachers can give individualized attention to every one of them. But even if you can't give that attention, let's not abuse the children in whatever form that it is. Because, hey, I found out my kid was made to walk with a placard. You know what? It's okay. Jesus saves. You know, I'm trying to think, because I know the school that Mora goes to, and this is one of the top, at least I know back in the 90s, 80s, 70s, it was those posh white-only schools before now they started allowing black children into it. And you can imagine if this is that kind of national school, what the other schools, and I'm not demeaning them in any way, but you can imagine what, because this one should be given the cream of the teachers. You can imagine what the other schools, the kids are going through. And I'm not saying for parents that you have to jump at everything that your child says to save them. No, it's where it matters and forming that relationship with them. And if these things are happening, are they able to tell you that this is what's happening in school or this is what's happening in the estate? And can you trust the word and offer the right support for them? Because nobody deserves to go through this. And there's earlier where we mentioned of how their parents would scoff at this thing and say they had it worse. And Mora pointed out that they're the same ones who need to go for help and seek therapy, because they need to heal from whatever it is. Yeah, because she's very right. Because if you look at what's even the country as itself, the reason why we have bad leadership in many sectors is because something went wrong in their childhoods and adolescence, their teenagehood. And that's why they've turned out the way they are. If you look at the cases of theft and, you know, robbery with violence or people harming each other, is something went wrong in between early childhood and adolescence. And we think we are okay because we have learned to deal with them in traumatic ways. So you either dismiss people or avoid getting attached to people, or you're abusive to people and abusive to power. And that's why Mora says, just because you guys, we didn't have a name for it, they have a name for it. They need help with dealing with it. As adults, a lot of us are broken and we're breaking people. They say hurt people. This, my conclusion is, I don't think this generation is weaker. I just think they've become more aware. And the trauma, if we don't help them deal with it right now, is just going to carry on, and the world is just going to keep getting worse and worse. That's my two cents. If we just don't learn to deal with it, nip it at the bud. Help them when they are still young enough to be molded and open enough to get help and be helped by it. So before we end, because I know we've said a lot, and I hope parents, we've picked 1, 2, 3 things about it. Is there anything you feel like you really need to get out there?
I think I would just tell the parents that the fact is, if your teenager is being distant, or generally teenagers in general, crave on the low, on low key, they all crave a good relationship with their parents, and they crave, quite honestly, just love and attention from their parents. So take time with your teenager, whether you have younger children who would probably require more attention. Make time for your teenager. Ask them how they are. You know, just try to relate with them and just meet them where they are at. And, you know, go on dates if necessary. Just make time for them and make them feel loved and appreciated, because they really do need it. And I feel like that's the first step in creating a relationship with your teenager, just making time for them and trying to understand them and meet them where they are. And I think that way, if we start like that, then the mental health of many of us as teenagers will improve, and will be able to tell you if we think we need to see a therapist or whatever other things are there to see. Yeah.
You know what? For such a young girl, you are really wise. I don't know if it's because you're a teenager, but I don't think so. I think it's just because you're really smart and wise. And I mean smart, not necessarily book-wise, but even in just what you say, because you've perfectly summarized. And I don't think I want to add on what she said, parents. If you've not heard what she has last said, please rewind and listen to it again. Take heed to it. But the one thing I will pick out that she said is that all your teenagers crave a relationship with you. They don't hate you. They're not rebelling. Deep down, she said they crave, yeah, to have a relationship with you. So please talk to your kids. Love them. Reaffirm them. Reassure them. She's talked about everything, whether it's from friends to social media to school. She's covered the whole thing, and she's given really good things. I don't think I want to add much on that. God willing, next time that we will do an episode with a teenage boy and hear what it is like from their side. And Mora, thank you so much, first of all, for accepting to come to this podcast. It is not something, especially teenagers, you know, they feel very sensitive and, oh my goodness, how will I perform, or people will hear, or will I become a celeb, whatever it is that could go in your head. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for everything you said. I think you perfectly put it. We have got a clear picture of what it is like in the mind and in the heart and in the life of a teenage girl, and it usually cuts across both genders. I can't wait to see you grow into a fine young lady and smart, and also inspire your friends, because I know you're also very supportive to your friends. They don't feel like they're walking this world alone, because peer pressure can also be good. And I know you're one of the good peer pressures. You are a funny girl. You are life. I know you, your energy, you know, you give positive vibes and you like being in a happy space. So I wish you all the best in life. I wish you the good grades. I know these guys have crammed. You're going to do Form 4 next year, and yet you're in Form 2. So I wish you the best going forward, and all successes and peace at home and in school, in your heart and in your mind. And to you and to all the teenagers out there, just know, as parents or as those somewhere in between, the me's, we love you guys. Here to support you in whatever way we can. We will listen, we will not judge, and we will not rat out unless we feel your life is in danger. Let your friends also know that there are people who care. They can find an auntie, an uncle, somebody in church that they honestly can trust and will not harm them. Your parents love you and they're just trying their best to be the best better. So cut them slack. We hope they listen. We hope they heed. We hope they share it with others. So as a parent, please share this episode with other people. Let them hear it from an actual teen's perspective. Share it out. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already subscribed. And if you'd also like to feature, please let me know. You can reach me on my email at babystepsbyd, D is D-double-E, so babystepsbyd@gmail.com. So that is it for me. And Mora, you can have a final word, or you can just say bye.
Yeah, I just like to thank you so much for allowing me to come on the podcast, for even inviting me to come on here and talk about this. Quite honestly, I was a bit skeptical about it. That's huge. But just generally just trying to, you know, deal with self-doubt and just put myself out there. So this was good. I can't wait for the next episode and I'm actually a subscriber, so I'm always looking forward to the episodes. And this is amazing work you're doing, quite honestly, just making the older generation, which is, you know, respectfully, the older generation understand what we go through as young people and as children. And yeah, it's just amazing work you're doing. And it's amazing work for the Lord. It's amazing work for just humanity in general. So thank you so much for what you're doing. And thanks for having me.
Oh, wow. You have really blown my trumpet. Thank you very much. I am very humbled. My week will go great this week. So thank you so much. And that's it from us at Baby Steps. Bye.
Bye.